Welcome to Music History Monday for September 21st, 2020. I'm Bob Greenberg, and the title for today's podcast is The Prodigal Son Returns. If you haven't already, please consider joining me on my subscription site at patreon.com/robertgreenbergmusic, where I blog, vlog, podcast, pontificate, review, and bloviate 4 to 6 times a week. On September 21st, 1962, 58 years ago today, the composer Igor Stravinsky returned to Russia for the first time in 48 years. He had been gone since 1914. Igor Fyodorovich Stravinsky was born on June 17, 1882, in the Tony summer resort town of Oranienbaum, today known as Lomonosov, on the Gulf of Finland, about 25 miles from St. Petersburg. His father, Fyodor Ignatievich Stravinsky, 1843 to 1902, was a well-known opera singer, a bass. Oh, how the Russians love their bass singers, with the Kiev Opera and the Mariinsky Theater there in Peter. The Stravinsky family was of Russian-Polish heritage, descended, we are told by biographer Stephen Walsh, quote, from a long line of Polish grandees, senators, and landowners, unquote. Stravinsky's mother, Anna Kirillovna Stravinskaya, born Kolodovskaya, 1854 to 1939, was from Kiev and came from a family hardly less distinguished than her husband's, landowners from the governing class of 19th century Russia. She numbered among her ancestors distinguished politicians, military officers, noblemen, and noble women. Igor Stravinsky grew up in St. Petersburg with his three brothers, two older, one younger, his mother and father, and the servants, as many as 5 or 6, in a large 8-room, second-story flat at number 66 Kriukov Canal. Many years later, Stravinsky described the family home this way, quote, our flat was furnished in the usual Victorian manner, with the usual bad paintings, the usual mauve upholstery, etc., but with an unusual library and 2 grand pianos. To recall it gives me no pleasure, however. I do not like to remember my childhood. Unquote. Well, like to remember it or not, Stravinsky grew up a privileged member of the lower nobility in a city, in a country, that would soon enough destroy his class and everything having to do with it. The immediate catalyst for the Russian Revolution and Stravinsky's subsequent 48-year exile from his native country was World War I. At the time the war started, in July 1914, Stravinsky was 32 years old and had experienced phenomenal success. His great balletic triumvirate, The Firebird of 1910, Petrushka 1911, and The Rite of Spring of 1912, had marked him as the man, the young giant of the avant-garde, the Russian Sultan of Slam, the Ayatollah of Ruski rock and rolla. Physically, though, Stravinsky was no giant, and his frail health and minuscule stature kept him out of the Russian army. Instead, he sat out the war in Switzerland, hardly 100 miles from the trenches of the Western Front, and watched while the world went up in flames. His brother Guri, 2 years his junior and his favorite, died serving in the Russian army, and his family's summer home in Ukraine was nearly destroyed in the fighting. Performances of his music dried up. By war's end, in 1918, Stravinsky, the sole breadwinner for a family of 6, was in dire financial straits. And then things got worse. A bit of background. By early 1917, the incredible incompetence and corruption of the Tsarist regime stood exposed, its disastrous content of the war having stripped away the last vestiges of the Tsar's clothing and with it, his authority. Food riots and political insurrection broke out in Petrograd, that is, St. Petersburg, on March 8, 1917. The troops were called out, but they refused to fire on the rioters, and mutiny spread through the ranks of the Imperial Russian Army and Navy. 7 days later, on March 15th, Tsar Nicholas II abdicated the throne in favor of a provisional, meaning a temporary, Republican government. Talk about too little too late. Events were moving way too quickly to be controlled, and the provisional government, closely identified with the Tsarist regime, was doomed from day one. On November 6 and 7, 1917, Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov, also known as Vladimir Lenin, 1870 to 1924, and his Bolshevik homies staged a coup d'etat. The provisional government was relegated to the toilet of history, and in its place was created a council, or Soviet, of people's commissars, with Lenin at its head. By January 1918, Lenin's Bolshevik Party, soon to be renamed the Communist Party, had solidified its hold over much of the former Russian Empire. But not all of it. And the Russian Civil War that followed remains one of the most horrific events of the 20th century. To this day, no one really knows how many died from battle, brutality, execution, disease, and starvation. Estimates range between 15 and 20 million human beings, the overwhelming majority of whom were non-combatants. And this on the heels of the 5 to 8 million lost by Russia during World War I. Igor Stravinsky, sitting and chain-smoking there in Switzerland, did not lose his life, though he lost about everything else. The World War and the Revolution left him virtually destitute. His Russian home and property were seized by the Soviets, and his royalty income evaporated entirely. Stravinsky wrote, quote, "This period was one of the hardest I ever experienced. The Communist Revolution deprived me of the last resources which had still from time to time been reaching me from my country, and I found myself face to face with nothing." Unquote. As a refugee stranded in Switzerland, he was a man without a country, and he and his family were at the mercy of politicians and immigration officials. There was no question of returning to Russia, now the Soviet Union. Stravinsky was a white Russian émigré, a member of the lesser nobility, a proscribed class, a non-person. And so began what Stravinsky called his exile. In 1920, he and his family settled in France. He became a French citizen in 1933. In September of 1939, Stravinsky came to the United States to spend the academic year in residence at Harvard. By the time the school year ended in June, France and the Low Countries were being overrun, and defeat and occupation by Germany appeared a near certainty. Stravinsky had what was, I think, a rather easy choice. Go back to France and take his chances with the Nazis, or stay in the United States. It was the grandmother of no-brainers. Stravinsky settled in Los Angeles and became an American citizen in 1945. Stravinsky's fame and ultimate fortune in the West, particularly in the United States, was an endless irritant to the Soviet authorities. He was the prodigal son that had never returned. Those Soviet authorities heaped mired on Stravinsky at every opportunity. He was denounced as being, quote, "the shameless prophet of bourgeois modernism," unquote. Of Stravinsky's work, Canticum Sacrum, the Soviet critic Israel Nestjev wrote of its, quote, tedious calculation and unbridled anarchy of sound. In the Canticum, there is literally not a single natural inflection. It is a dead desert, barren and stony. How ravaged, how emasculated must have been the soul of the composer capable of creating such dreadful music, unquote. Oh, nice. When Dmitri Shostakovich came to New York in March of 1949 as a member of the 7-person Soviet delegation to the rather grandly named Cultural and Scientific Congress for World Peace, a speech was read in his name that singled out Stravinsky in particular. Quote, Stravinsky betrayed his native land and severed himself from his people by joining the camp of reactionary modern musicians. Stravinsky's moral barrenness reveals itself in his openly nihilistic writings, proclaiming the meaninglessness and absence of content in his music. Unquote. Yeah, back in California, a reporter asked Stravinsky if he'd be willing to take part in a debate with Shostakovich. Stravinsky's response, quote, how can you talk to them? They are not free. There is no discussion possible with people who are not free, unquote. Joseph Stalin died 4 years later in 1953, and with the ascent of Nikita Khrushchev came the thaw, a lessening of repression within the Soviet Union, which claimed now to seek peaceful coexistence with the West. It was in the name of coexistence that the Soviet Union engineered what was nothing less than a propaganda coup by luring, quote, the most famous living Russian composer, unquote, who was in fact an American citizen, back to Russia in celebration of his 80th birthday in 1962. The effort to convince Stravinsky to visit Russia began in 1960 and was orchestrated as carefully as one of Stravinsky's own works. The attacks on Stravinsky stopped, and in their place were casual, innocent inquiries from a variety of channels. Would Stravinsky perhaps consider visiting his homeland in honor of his 80th birthday? Then word began to circulate that Stravinsky was going to Russia. Stravinsky himself was incredulous, and no one seemed to know where the rumor began. Then he was informed that his music was suddenly, spontaneously being performed across the Soviet Union, including many of his difficult, modernistic recent works. Finally, on June 10, 1961, a delegation of Soviet musicians led by the composer Tikhon Krennikov, 1913 to 2007, visited Stravinsky at his home at 1260 North Weatherly Drive in Los Angeles and formally invited him to visit the Soviet Union as part of his 80th birthday celebration in 1962. Stravinsky was taken aback, telling his friend Pierre Suvchinsky that it was, quote, terrifying to think about it, terrifying to peer into my 80th year, terrifying the musical goings on in Russia, terrifying the idea that they should celebrate their venerable musician who happens to smile when he feels like throwing up, unquote. A vomit Stravinsky might, given his seemingly irreconcilable desire to go home and his pathological hatred of the Soviet regime. And let's put this in historical perspective. Thaw or no thaw, on August 13th, 1961, 2 months after that Russian delegation visited Stravinsky at his home, the border between West and East Berlin was closed and barbed wire was stretched across that border in preparation for the construction of a wall. 1 year later, and just 10 days after Stravinsky's Russian visit, the Cuban Missile Crisis, October 16th to 28th, 1962, brought the world to the brink of nuclear war. Yes, indeed, the thought of visiting the Soviet Union in 1962 and being used as Cold War fodder could make anyone want to puke. But visit Stravinsky did, arriving with his wife Vera and assistant Robert Kraft at Sheremetyevo Airport in Moscow on September 21st, 1962, 58 years ago today. He had not been in Russia since the beginning of World War I in 1914, 48 years before. He spent 3 weeks there, split evenly between Moscow and Leningrad, called today, as it was in Stravinsky's youth, St. Petersburg. The Soviet authorities pulled out all the stops. Concerts of Stravinsky's music were staged, banquets were held, photo ops and television interviews took place, old friends and distant relatives were dug up and brought to Stravinsky. He had dinner with Shostakovich. The conversation was polite if superficial and catchatorian. He went to the Kremlin to meet Premier Nikita Khrushchev. Dazzled by it all, the usually savvy and skeptical Stravinsky left his judgments at the door and just gushed. The Soviet apparatchiks could not have scripted his comments better had they themselves written them. Stravinsky told a reporter from Pravda, quote, "I know and love your newspaper and often read it," unquote. He told another reporter, quote, "In the United States, I have tried hard to promote the great art of Russia, Glinka, Mussorgsky, Rachmaninoff, Scriabin, Prokofiev, Shostakovich, names as close and dear to me as the names of the people I love," unquote. He told his interpreter, Alexandra Afonina, quote, "I'm so delighted by everything I've seen. How remarkable that your government, with its vast building program for the new Moscow, still takes care of its ancient monuments," unquote. At one of the banquets, Stravinsky offered this toast, quote, "A man has one birthplace, one fatherland, one country. He can only have one country, and the place of his birth is the most important factor in his life. I regret that circumstances separated me from my fatherland, that I did not give birth to my works here, and above all, that I was not here to help the new Soviet Union create its music. I did not leave Russia of my own will, and even though I disliked much in my Russia and Russia generally, yet the right to criticize Russia is mine, because Russia is mine and I love it, and I do not give any foreigner that right," unquote. Oh, goodness. Wittingly or unwittingly, the 80-year-old Stravinsky allowed the Soviets to claim him as their own. And in doing so, they managed to silence his criticism of the Soviet regime for the remainder of his life. It is a reminder, not that we really need one these days, that when it comes to propaganda, public relations, and manipulating the truth, no one, not even our present regime, can spin things quite like the Russians. Thank you. To sample and download one or all of my many courses on subjects musical produced by the Great Courses / The Teaching Company, please visit my website at robertgreenbergmusic.com.